Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Guillermo Amaral joins me. We're going to be talking about PG Backrest, the way to back up your Postgres data and restore it efficiently. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Guillermo Amaral. Episode 429, recorded April 11th, 2017. PG Backrest. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by GoCD, an on-premise, open-source continuous delivery server by ThoughtWorks. GoCD gives you complete control of and visibility into your deployments across multiple teams. Since GoCD is open-source, you can download and use it for free. To discover the power of their pipelines, visit gocd.io/twit. And by Cloudflare, the operating system for the edge of the internet. More than 6 million websites, apps, APIs, and SaaS companies use Cloudflare's services to load fast, stay secure, and weather whatever the internet throws at them. For a free online chat session with a Cloudflare support engineer, visit cloudflare.com/twit. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneAge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the little projects, projects you may be using every day and totally unaware of it, projects you might want to download right after the show and play with. And I bet there's a certain category of people out there that will probably want to do that with today's topic. Joining me today as my co-host is Guillermo Amaral. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Randall. How's it going?
Hey, hi. Hi. And where are you speaking to us from?
My Tijuana bunker. Same place. You can probably tell.
Oh. Okay, a little cleaner today, though. I don't see quite as many things on the back wall. Maybe I'm just confused.
Actually, it's a little dirtier than usual, but it's everything's on this side where you can't see it.
Okay, well, that's moving things around. I mean, there's a lot of clutter in this office that I'm sitting in as well. I'm at the ZipRecruiter headquarters in downtown Santa Monica. I'm on the 11th floor, and we have figured out finally that if you lower the shades all the way, you can actually see behind me. If you're watching the video, you can actually see the skyline behind me. Same thing we used to do from the 43rd floor of the third tallest building in downtown LA, but that was a long time ago. Anyway, so this isn't This Week in Geography. This is This Week. No, it's not a This Week show. It's Floss Weekly. So let's talk about open source software today. And today we have a really personally interesting project, although I end up always wanting to play with all the stuff that I ever talk about on this thing. But it's because it involves one of my favorite things to talk about, and that's Postgres. I'm not a very big MySQL fan. I'm a Postgres fan as soon as I figured out how to start using it and installing it. And I still prefer that for new starts. But unfortunately, a lot of my clients end up starting with MySQL because they don't know of anything else. But what we're going to talk about today is backup and restore. Now, that sounds boring, but it's absolutely essential in the world of databases, in the world of trying to be up and running, be live. You want to have all your data backed up. You want to test your backups. You want to also be able to recover quickly. And David Steele, who came up with PG Backrest, started developing it a while back, has come up with some really cool ideas and concepts around how to get backups being done with Postgres. There's a number of solutions for doing backups in Postgres, but he seems to have gotten something fairly innovative here. So we'll be bringing him on in a couple of minutes. Guillermo, you have anything to add to this before we bring him on?
Well, sounds about right. I'm not a big database guy anymore, at least. But I have had to make a copy of a database, once in a while. So I am familiar with the issues with tarring and copying things over and rsync and what else. I know importing can also be an issue. So I'm guessing this will solve all of those problems, which is good.
I'm hoping it will. But before we bring him on, I do have an important message to bring to you, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by GoCD. GoCD is the on-premise, open-source, continuous delivery server created by ThoughtWorks. With GoCD's comprehensive pipeline modeling, you can model complex workflows across multiple teams with ease. GoCD can easily configure dependencies for fast feedback and on-demand deployment with its parallel and sequential execution. Its fan-in, fan-out dependency management always does the right thing, avoiding spurious builds. The Value Stream app lets you track a change from commit to deploy at a glance. GoCD's real power is the visibility it provides over your end-to-end workflow, so you get complete control of and visibility into all your deployments across the organization. GoCD offers complete customization for your software's individual needs. GoCD will perform tests written in most languages or frameworks. Their test reporting will tell you in exactly which change set and on which platform a test started breaking. You can compare content across any two arbitrary builds, making it invaluable when troubleshooting a broken pipeline. GoCD supports auditable deployment and can delegate the configuration of pipelines to users without full-blown admin privileges. GoCD has extension points for which plugins can be created, and numerous plugins are available to you, or you can write your own. Say goodbye to deployment panic and hello to consistent, predictable deliveries. GoCD is open source that you can download and use for free. Discover the power of their pipelines at gocd.io/twit. That's gocd.io/twit. Commercial support and enterprise add-ons, including disaster recovery, are also available. And we thank GoCD for their support of Floss Weekly. Now let's go ahead and bring in our guest, David Steele. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
And where are you speaking? Yeah, thank you. And you're welcome. And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm in my office at Crunchy Data Solutions in Chantilly, Virginia.
Ah, 3 hours ahead of us. Okay. It's good. Well, the rest of us are West Coast today. So, yeah, yeah.
Almost
so you got
lunchtime.
Any stock picks for this? Yeah, stock picks? No, just kidding. All right. Just kidding. All right. Hey, so give us a 30,000-foot view. What is PG Backrest and what problem is it trying to solve?
Okay. So, obviously, it's backup software for Postgres. It's not the first one. A lot of them have been written. We saw certain problems, and we wanted to take a completely different approach. And so that's how PG Backrest was born. It was really designed in concert with Stephen Frost, who's a committer on the Postgres project. So he's got a lot of intimate knowledge about Postgres. I've also been a user for 18 years. So together, we kind of pulled our knowledge and decided, all other things being equal, let's say we didn't worry about how much time we were going to spend developing or how hard it would be, what would a solution look like? And the big thing that we decided was using the standard command line tools that are typically used in backup, like rsync, tar, et cetera, was a problem. It put a lot of constraints on the software in terms of parallelism, in terms of extra types of checks you could do against the data. And so our decision was to eliminate all of that, come up with basically implement all that in our software instead. And that would allow us, as painful as it would be to do all of that, that would allow us to then implement all of these kind of cool features that, people see in PG Backrest that would be very difficult to do using command line tools.
Well, I mean, you could argue that, I've got a slave set up. I've got a read-only slave set up of Postgres, and there used to be some bolt-on solution to do that. Now it's sort of baked into the actual releases. Isn't that a backup? Isn't that sufficient for what we're trying to talk about today?
A replica actually is not a backup. That's kind of like saying RAID is a backup. the biggest problem with a replica generally is that unless you have a replication delay built in, everything you do on the master is instantly reflected on the replica. So let's say you drop a table off the master. Well, that table is going to be dropped in your replica almost instantly. So, and of course, there are situations where an entire data center might go out. You might lose your master and your replica. So a replica should be considered part of an HA solution. There are a lot of components to HA. One of those is backup, replication, other things like that. But a replica in itself is not a backup.
Okay, well, that and so what extra features do you need to really have a backup then?
Well, the main thing is you need to be able to move back in time. The whole, there are certain things. So a backup might just be to recover from a hardware failure. But in that case, actually, replicas are your first line of defense. So if your master fails, you can fail over to your replica and you're good to go. So where backups come in really handy is moving back in time. So you discovered that something bad happened to your data, some big mistake was made, and so with a backup and with write-ahead logs from the database, you're actually able to restore a backup and then move forward to any point in time that you want to recover that lost table, to recover that lost customer record. The other thing you can use backups for is to say, bring up reporting servers or do development work or staging. And you don't really want to plug those things into your production environment, say, using base backup or something that would require direct access to prod. So you can do those sorts of things from your backups. You can also bring up new replicas from your backups. So there are a number of purposes, you know, even outside of disaster recovery, that you can use backups for.
I was pleased when I was looking over the documentation that at least at one point this was all in Perl. Why was that your choice of language?
Boy, good question. The reason it was originally in Perl is because I had written a number of backup solutions over the years in Perl. So that was a good starting point because I had done that before. Perl is a pretty good language to, you know, work at the system level with. It allows you to rapidly prototype, you know, basically get something to market pretty quickly. It's generally portable. It's generally available. The libraries that I needed to make PG Backrest work are available in package form on a majority of operating systems. So it just seemed like a good choice from that perspective. We have started moving some functionality into C, particularly the newer page checksum feature. But for the most part, the bulk of the project is in Perl and will probably remain that way for some time to come.
So talk to me about how this is typically used then. Okay, so I've got a Postgres solution. I do have a couple replicas. And I want to start doing point-in-time backups, I guess, so I can do this thing about rolling forward if something bad happens. Can you tell me what are some of the issues getting something like this set up and getting it to work?
Well, it's actually remarkably simple. One of the project goals of PG Backrest was to work with very, very large databases and, you know, work in parallel and work at a large scale and deal with very, very complex situations. But at the same time, be simple to set up for users who had, you know, maybe just one database or have a small collection of clusters or things like that. So you can go, if you just have one database, you can start really simple and just do backups locally. I know that sounds kind of crazy, but if you're doing backups of the server itself, then, you know, that's one technique you can use. You can back up to NFS. A better method is actually to have a backup server. And a larger enterprise, you'd want to do this where that server is responsible for scheduling and running all the backups. In that case, that server will do the backups. The master database is just required to, you know, be configured to do archiving to get those write-ahead logs off of the server. And then the backup server is also aware of the replica. And the replica or standby, however you want to call it. So the standby can, let's say it loses touch with the master, can use the backup server to get write-ahead logs to catch up. You can build new standbys from there. And the other thing is the backup server can do backups from the standby rather than from your master. So because Backrest uses SSH as its protocol, you know, transport for its protocol, setting up that trusted connection is very easily. It's just very easy. You do it just like you'd set up any SSH connection, a trusted SSH connection, and then Backrest on the different servers will start talking to each other. So setup's really easy, and then once you've got everything going, most of the most of the common scenarios that you're going to need to deal with have been thought of by Backrest and are available as options. Various recovery scenarios, point in time recovery. Full backups, Delta backups, things like that. They're all available at the command line and very simple to run. And you don't have to, for instance, write your own recovery.com files and et cetera, which when you're trying to get a system up and running again after a failure is really not what you want to be worrying about.
You did mention that you have something like SSH in order to, you know, like a tunnel between the systems. Is it like SSH? Are you rolling your own, or is it actually SSH?
It is actually SSH. Sorry, maybe I was channeling my inner Valley Girl there or something, but it is actually just standard SSH protocol, and everything's run over that. One of the advantages is that you don't actually have to expose the Postgres port to, for instance, the backup server. With most backup solutions, you need to have, that port has to be available to start and stop the backup. But because Backrez has its own protocol, it actually sends those commands through the protocol layer rather than having to send them, host to host over TCP.
So I know this already has Postgres in the name, right? So it's PG Backrez. Mm-hmm. But are you maybe planning on porting this to some other engine later, like MySQL or anything else, I guess?
I have actually thought about that. And it's one of the reasons why, in the software, I resisted for the command names and stuff using terms like wall push and wall get. I used archive push and archive get instead, and all the general options and stuff also follow that same pattern. And the idea was, yes, to possibly expand this to other database platforms. To be perfectly frank, it's been such a large project, and I've spent so much time on it just to get it up to snuff for Postgres that I don't see myself doing that in the near future. But perhaps that's something that someone else would contribute or use the framework of PG Backrez to develop a MySQL solution.
Yeah, I was mentioning that it's good that you can keep a layer of abstraction there just in case you want to later on replace that, or if something really big changes in Postgres, you can adjust to different versions, I suppose. So I did have another question. In this case, you did mention that you've been working on this for a while. Is somebody paying you to do this work, or is it just your hobby, or is your company paying you to do this work for PG Backrez?
Well, it actually started a company I worked for before my current company, Resonate Networks, which is an ad tech company, and they had, as you can imagine, really, really big databases. And we were trying to solve the problem of backing those databases up. We'd used some of the standard solutions, and really nothing was working. So at that point, Stephen and I sat down and we mapped this thing out. We talked to our employer there and said, we want to do this as an open source solution. And they were on board with it. They had no problem with that. I mean, obviously, there are advantages to them. They still use the software now. I've been gone from there for 3 years, but they still run PG Backrez. So then when I came to Crunchy, Crunchy Data Solutions, my employer, we essentially do Postgres support. We do development. We've got a lot of committers here. We do a lot of backend development. I've also worked on a project called PG Audit as well. So, actually, at this point, Crunchy Data Solutions is funding most of the PG Backrez work, but it's also my personal project, so I spend a lot of my own time on it too. So at this point, you could say it's probably about 50-50. But I will say that it would not be in the state it is now without the support from Crunchy Data.
So how would this actually compare to something, let's say, like rsync and tarring, everything else and just copying it, keeping a copy or maybe a snapshot using something like the snapshot features on FreeBSD? Would this be comparable to something like that, or is this going to be faster, more efficient? I'm guessing if it'll automatically do it for you, you don't have to worry about it, it's just going to be better. But have you guys actually compared both solutions?
Well, certainly, I actually have in the standard talk that I give on PG Backrez to conferences, I have a slide that actually talks about a performance comparison between rsync and PG Backrez. Rsync is actually natively a little bit faster than PG Backrez. It's written in C and it has some advantages. But the problem with rsync is it doesn't do destination compression. So when the data gets to the destination, it's not compressed. And if you have very, very large databases, this is a serious problem, especially since Postgres data actually compresses really well. There's a lot of repetition in it, in the tuple headers and page headers and et cetera. So you can often get 75 to 80% compression. So to have to store that uncompressed is really painful. So if you compare PG Backrez to rsync in terms of, if you rsynced it and then you had to compress it, PG Backrez is already quite a bit faster. Then, if you introduce multiprocessing, and we have people using PG Backrez who are running up to 64 parallel processes to do compression for backup and restore. So in those cases, the performance compared to rsync is, there's just simply no comparison. Now, snapshots are a different deal. Snapshots obviously can be quite fast. The first problem with snapshots is that the snapshot is taken on the database server to start with. And so you've got to get that snapshot, you know, export that snapshot before it actually consists of a backup. You know, data sitting around the database server is not really a backup. So you've got that problem of exporting the snapshots. You've got the problem of thinking about, you know, scheduling of expiration now. How long do you keep the snapshots? And then you're still left in the same position of dealing with the write ahead log. You know, you've got to make sure that that write ahead log gets exported or, you know, moved off of the server, or you're in a situation where you just have these point in time backups. And, you know, let's say you're taking them once a day and your database server dies at 11 p.m., you might lose 23 hours of data unless you've actually kept the write ahead logs to, you know, make that backup play forward. And what we found actually dealing with the write ahead logs, doing archiving correctly, dealing with, you know, network errors and duplication and the database pushing the same archive log again, you know, timelines, expiration, associating archive logs with different versions of Postgres as you upgrade, et cetera, et cetera. I can't even go into all of it. But it turns out that's actually a much harder problem in detail than backup itself is. Backup is all about parallelism and copying files and compressing them as quickly as possible. Archive logging has a lot of rules around it. And if you get those wrong, then you may find that you don't have the backup that you hoped you had.
Hey, so we have a question from the chat room. Esol asks, how would one see into PG Backrest and see, get the status of backups?
Okay, so there's an info command that you can run at the command line. You can run that anywhere in the ecosystem. So let's say you've got a master, a replica, and a backup server. So you've got three servers. Most of the PG Backrest commands are symmetric. So you can just run them wherever you want. The info command falls into that category. So you can run info. There's two ways to get info. The default is text output, which, you know, we add stuff to and kind of mess with the formatting on from time to time. So in the documentation, it warns you to never try to parse the text output because we make no guarantees that the format will stay the same from release to release. For that, we have JSON output. So if you do dash dash output equals JSON, it'll give you, you know, everything it knows about the database backups, write ahead log, what write ahead log is associated with backups, you know, when the backups were done, you know, basically all the information that PG Backrest knows about the backup repository is dumped out in JSON format. And the JSON, we actually do maintain compatibility over releases. So we add new fields fairly regularly as we have new information to add or we think of things that might be useful to people. But we don't take anything away or change any of the names there. So that's your stable format for getting information out of PG Backrest for just, you know, obviously looking at it manually. If you want to integrate into your monitoring system, then that's the way you're going to do it using the info command and the JSON output.
Okay, good. Thanks. I'm sure Esol appreciates that as well. I haven't asked this question yet. What versions of Postgres does this work with?
So it actually works with Postgres versions 8.3 through 9.6, which sounds like a lot, and it is. But up until up until maybe a year ago, there were still a lot of people running 8.4 in the field. And a lot of people were doing it not because they wanted to, but because they had some dependency, you know, some software dependency that was required 8.4 and they hadn't upgraded yet. So in the last year or so, it seems incidence of people who are running 8.4 has all but disappeared. Obviously, 8.4 has been EOL for at least 2 years now. So, you know, people have finally caught up and said, well, we can't use 8.4 anymore. But it doesn't really cost a lot to maintain that support. And so for now, we're hanging on to it.
And is it possible to back up from one version of one release level of Postgres and restore it on another version? Or is that the same problem you have with the binary wall logs, things like that?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not. You would have to do a PG upgrade. What PG Backrest does support is it does support backup over versions. So let's say you do your PG upgrade. You can notify Backrest that you've done an upgrade, and it will record that into the repository. And it'll still do expiration over your backups on multiple versions of Postgres, you know, based on your backup schedule. So Backrest is certainly aware of the fact that you might be upgrading and using multiple versions of Postgres. You can certainly be using multiple versions of Postgres with Backrest in a single repo. So you might have one 9.5 database and one 9.2 database, and that works perfectly fine. Backrest does not, unfortunately, automatically do that binary upgrade for you. That's quite a complicated procedure, and pulling that out of PG upgrade, you know, trying to duplicate that PG upgrade code would probably be unwise.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing about PG upgrade is it requires two installations running side by side. I ran into problems with that trying to use it for upgrading. So I've been resorting just to, you know, when I upgrade, I just dump all the text and then load it back in. But that still works too. So
I do that quite a bit actually. Yeah, if I can, if the database is small enough, then I'll often do a dump and restore, just because it's simple and I know it works.
Yes. How about RDS? Does it work with Amazon's product?
Amazon has their own backup solutions. I'm sure you're not surprised to hear that. I actually talk to Grant McAllister pretty regularly. He shows up at most of the Postgres conferences. So they have a solution based on snapshotting and wall archiving built into RDS. It's unfortunately not possible to get binary copies of your database out of RDS, which I do consider to be a bit of a weakness.
Oh, so because one of my clients has now moved their database to RDS, and I guess this is completely out of the picture for that then. That's too bad.
It really is. Part of the reason is that up until recently, you had to be a super user to even run the start and stop backup commands. So Stephen Frost has fixed that problem in 9.6. I was trying to get a patch committed in 9.7 that would allow group level permissions on the cluster directory, so that you could do backups as a non privileged user. And unfortunately, we weren't quite able to get that in. It touched a lot of areas of the code, and so I decided to voluntarily pull it and try again for that feature in 10.0. But after we get some of those features in, that might make it easier for Amazon to open up a binary copy of the data and allow people to get at it directly.
Cool. Well, I know Guillermo has a couple more questions to ask. He's chomping at the bit here, but I have an important message to bring all of you. So this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Cloudflare. Cloudflare is on a mission to help build a better internet. Cloudflare makes your site faster, safer, and more reliable, so you can stop worrying about slow loading page times, downtime, or getting hacked. Cloudflare is incredibly easy to use, and sign up takes less than 5 minutes. Cloudflare's global network of more than 100 data centers caches your content and moves it closer to visitors. They'll automatically enable all the latest internet protocols like IPv6 and HTTPS rewrites that keep you fast and secure. Your domain will automatically configure to utilize HTTP2. End-to-end, Cloudflare speeds up every request to your site with performant DNS, caching, content optimization, load balancing, and more. Make your site or app or API more secure, because Cloudflare doesn't only provide DDoS protection. Their web application firewall is powered by a massive IP reputation that updates for all users. And using Cloudflare gives your business the option to use more than one cloud provider, so you don't get locked into any of them. Plus, Cloudflare caches so much of your content, you'll end up saving big on your cloud compute bill. Plans range from free, $20 a month, $200 a month, and custom plans for enterprise. Cloudflare's free plan is part of their mission to help build a better internet. When we're builders, makers, writers, everyone who has a good idea can reach a global audience. No matter what plan you sign up for with Cloudflare, you're joining a massive neighborhood watch for the edge of the internet. Cloudflare is offering the TWIT listeners a free online chat session with one of their top support engineers to answer any of your questions. Visit cloudflare.com/TWIT to sign up today. That's cloudflare.com/TWIT. And we thank Cloudflare for their support of Floss Weekly. And now, Guillermo, you had a question?
Question was, I know that you mentioned that PG Backrest has JSON support, right? But I guess it's probably a good question to ask if it does have a lumbar support.
No. The idea was actually just to, rather than having trying to support a lot of different formats and standards, to just support one really common one, and then people can sort of connect that up and do whatever translation they need to do on their own. Otherwise, it's kind of a never-ending chase to kind of chase down all the different formats and standards that people would like to use or that their monitoring solutions use.
Okay. Well, I do have another question here. I was wondering if you have this running on your server, how much overhead would this be? Does it actually require a lot of processing and everything? I know you mentioned that this is able to, you know, keep a lot of copies and contact other servers? Is there going to be a lot of overhead if you run this?
It really depends. There can be quite a bit of overhead. It depends on how large your database is and how much parallelism you opt for. So, for instance, if you're running with, you know, one process, which is the default for smaller installations, then you're probably not going to have a lot of overhead because you'll max out on one core on compression. And, you know, that's not going to chew up a lot of I/O and it won't chew up a lot of network bandwidth. However, as you scale, so let's say you've decided to use, like I said, like we've seen once or twice in the field, 64 cores for compression. Well, it, you know, Backrest will use all of that, basically all the processing power on each of those cores that you dedicate to it, as long as there's enough I/O bandwidth to keep the cores fed. So these days you're seeing more and more SSD-based solutions, which will happily, you know, send that data up to the cores. So yeah, you can really use a lot of resources. However, what I always tell people is back up slowly. You know, you don't need to be in this great rush to get a backup. If you can do your weekly full backup in a day or so, and or if you have, you know, a low time when you can do backups and schedule it for that, and then you're getting a couple of incrementals or differentials during the week to make your restore times less, then you should really be pretty happy with that. You don't need to worry about backing up extremely quickly. However, where it comes in really handy is restore. So restore is an area where you do want to, that you want it to happen really quickly because your database is down and you want to get it back up as quickly as possible. Since the database is down, you don't really have to worry about using a lot of resources. In fact, you should be using all of the system's resources in order to get that restore completed. So the Delta Restore feature that we have, what it does, it actually does checksums, SHA-1 checksums on all the files that exist on the disk, and then we'll only pull the files from the backup that it needs. So depending on the rate of changing your database, restores can be incredibly fast, and they're safe because everything is checksummed. And even for a full restore, it's still incredibly fast because you've got multiple decompression streams going, et cetera. So how many resources you decide to use is really up to you. It scales from minimal to essentially as much as you want.
Okay, so if you have this on like a very, let's say, popular API backend or something, and it's always getting used, would this slow down the service? I'm guessing you're locking tables and everything just to be able to do like a static, you know, a snapshot of everything, right? Would this slow everything down?
Absolutely not. The good thing is, unlike pgdump, which actually does put certain types of locks on structures, although normally you won't notice that unless you're creating structures dynamically or whatever, Backrest takes absolutely no locks on the database at all. So the way it works is the way all Postgres binary backup works. It essentially notifies the database that it wants to start taking a backup. And the database puts a marker, or actually, sorry, at that point it just creates a checkpoint, you know, does a checkpoint so all the data is written to disk. It switches the wall segments, and then it gives you a starting location where your backup is starting. And then you, at that point, all you're doing is copying files however you want to. You can use rsync, tar. In Backrest's case, it uses its own, you know, code that I've written to make that work. And when you're done, you tell Postgres you're done, and it writes a marker into the wall saying this is the end of the backup. And it has the start backup location there as well. So, you know, when you do a restore, all Postgres knows is that it essentially looks like it crashed. So what it's going to do is go into the backup label that was written, find the initial checkpoint where the backup started, and then replay all the write-ahead log from that location to the end of backup location and then beyond if you specify that. So really, when you're looking at the load on the server, you're not looking at any direct load on the database in terms of locking or page cache or anything like that. All you're looking at is I/O to get the files off of the disk, and CPU to do the compression, and of course network to, you know, move that data off of the server. One more option you have is you can actually do your backup from a standby instead. So it will go and actually copy the vast majority of the files from the standby and only copy a few files from the master. So if you really want to keep the load off your master, that would be the way you do it.
Okay, so you mentioned before you mentioned that you have like an SSH tunnel, you know, in order to communicate between the I guess where your backup's going to get stored and where you're copying it from, right? Can you maybe go into a little bit of the communication model you're using? Is it going to be something, you know, point to point only? Can you have many listeners that they all get a a copy of the backup, or how does it actually work?
Okay, well, currently it is point to point. So Backrest is installed symmetrically. So you install the same version, you know, of Backrest all over the place. There's no client or server. There's just, you know, the Backrest binary. You install that. So when Backrest needs a service from someplace else, it makes a connection to that server. So it might be making a connection to the master to start the backup server to copy files, things like that, archiving. So all the connections are point to point, but any particular Backrest process might be holding multiple of them at any given time. The protocol itself is very simple. It's actually all JSON based, which shouldn't be too surprising since we're using JSON in other areas. We figured, you know, just reuse it. The only complicated part is the binary transfer area where the, you know, checksumming, compression and transfer and all that kind of stuff is done. But other than that, it's extremely simple. We are looking at, for instance, one of the problems we have right now, not a problem exactly, but one of the limitations of Backrest is if you're using backup server, you end up with one backup server, which obviously means a single point of failure. Now, that doesn't mean that Backrest can't be used in an HA solution. In an HA solution, your idea is to be eliminating single points of failure by creating other redundancies. So in an HA solution, your replicas might be one of your redundancies. Another thing that most enterprises do is they'll actually back up the Backrest repository using their enterprise backup software. So they have another offsite backup somewhere of the Backrest repository. So there are a lot of ways to make it HA. But one of the features we would like to add in the near future is the ability to have multiple backup servers and have them talk to each other and sync up data. So whoever gets the data gets the data, and then the backup servers make sure that there are multiple available copies of it.
Yeah. So I was asking if maybe you can go into the into what else are you planning for PG Backrest. You mentioned this feature, having multiple, I guess, receivers for the backup. But is something else in your roadmap? Maybe something, you know, closer down the road that you can you're already working on.
Sure. Let me talk about some of the things we've just added very recently, because I don't know how recently you've really been looking at the website. But the two big features we added recently were parallel archiving. So this means if you've got a really big busy system and you're creating a lot of write-ahead log, Backrest can actually compress and transfer those files in parallel. Previously, parallelism was reserved for backup and restore. The other feature we added recently, which has now that more of the packagers are getting the C library in, is useful, is Backrest will check all of your page checksums during the backup. So since Postgres 9.3, you've been able to initialize your database with page checksums. Unfortunately, there's not a whole lot you can do with them until you find out that you've got an invalid block. And then Postgres will just tell you and, you know, stop your query. There's mitigation you can do there. You can zero out the block, and there's other things you can do. If it's an index, you could rebuild it. But rather than find that out 1 or 2 years down the road, Backrest will tell you with every backup whether all your page checksums are good or not. This isn't a complete fix for corruption. It's better for, you know, say block-level corruption, disk-level corruption, stuff like that. But it's certainly something, and it's a lot better than finding out years down the road. The very next feature that we're working on, which we're expecting to have out in May, is S3 support. This has been a big ask for some time. Some of the backup software that's out there does S3 support, notably Wally. So we're trying to eliminate that complaint, if you will, by getting that S3 backend in so that – and obviously it's one of the easiest ways to backup offsite. So now you'll be able to store your backups directly in S3. We looked at trying to use a fuse driver or something like S3FS, but unfortunately the performance was not very good because it's trying to – make the mount look POSIX compliant, which S3 very definitely is not. So we've decided we'd be better off actually just working with S3 directly. And so that's actually the code I have started on this week. And we expected to have that tested and ready and out the door sometime in May. After that, the next big feature we're looking at is parallel archive get. So that means a ability to fetch in parallel multiple archive files and store those locally so that when Postgres needs them, they're ready to go.
What's your community like? Are you the sole committer? Do you have a bunch of people helping you out? I mean, who's participating in this?
So the community is slowly growing. I'm the sole committer at this time. The other major contributor is Cynthia Shang, who also works for Crunchy Data. So she works on a lot of features as well, especially around backup management and stuff like that. Primarily, to this point, we've had some contributions made from just exact code contributions made by people in the community. We also get a lot of testing. So we have a lot of diehard fans out there who are happy to take the most recent version, deploy it in their enterprises, and sometimes they're quite large, and get us feedback on new features and let us know if something's been broken or something's not working. We're really big on testing. So we test extensively. We use Travis for our continuous integration on GitHub. But the problem is with new features is that even if you're testing, your test coverage is extremely good, and for our new features, it's generally 100%, statement and conditional and coverage. Things can be left out. So sometimes you just forget something that in retrospect was really obvious, and all the testing in the world isn't going to tell you that. So especially for the new features, we have people who need them enough that they're willing to deploy them and give us feedback and let us know if there's anything wrong. Then we can write new tests for the fixes, and so if we have a regression in the future. So from a regression standpoint, Backrest is extremely well covered. If we break something in a existing area while we're doing new code, then the test suite is very good at telling us that. But like I said, new features can always have bugs in them that just weren't, things you didn't think of. And if you didn't even think to code them, you certainly didn't think to test them. But so the testing, from the community, if you go to the GitHub page and look through the issues, historical issues, you can see there have been over time a lot of contributors who have found bugs. I always make sure all those contributors get credit in the release notes. So that's another good place to look if you want to kind of see the variety of people who have contributed over time. Mm-hmm. But right now, as I said, it's primarily testing and debugging is where we've been getting most of our contributions to date. There have been maybe a dozen contributors of actual patches.
Cool. And has there been a need for any upstream changes to Postgres itself to support the things you're trying to roll out?
Yes. a need is strong. Well, the thing is that because we support so many versions of Postgres, it's not really possible to look at a change in Postgres as something that's required for Backrest, right? So say for the parallel archiving, we had to be a bit clever about that and figure out a way that would work all the way back to version 8.3. Now, we're not necessarily against having some features that are only supported, some kind of version forward, especially if it's an advanced feature, which is less likely to be useful for people on very old versions of Postgres. But in general, we like to have the features work across as many versions as possible. So the approach we've been taking is to make things better with contributions to Postgres. Let me give an example for the new version of Postgres. One of the things I've noticed as I've been working through the Postgres source code in relation to backup is there are a lot of parts of the database that actually are not persistent. So if you go into the Postgres directory, and there are a bunch of directories in there, right? The PG data directory. But really, only a couple of those are persistent, really just multi-exact, C-log, base, and global, and any table spaces that you might have. So all those other files, especially all the temp files that Postgres stores, while you're creating a temp table or doing a really big sort, are actually deleted when the system is, or the database is restarted, or when it's recovered from a backup. So I figured out all the files that did not need to be backed up and submitted those as a patch to Postgres, which got review from all the people who had written those various subsections, and they all chimed in and said, yeah, we actually don't need to back any of that up. It gets reinitialized on startup. And so there's an example another patch I contributed to version 10, which of course will be the next version, is one to right now, currently, when you do a stop backup, Postgres waits for all the write-ahead log to be archived. But Backrest also does that monitoring, so I added a feature to allow the stop backup command to return immediately rather than, you know, being stuck blocking in that command. And then Backrest actually does its own monitoring. And it just makes the system run a little more smoothly because you don't have to try to cancel that query or wonder, did it really stop the backup? You know, the actual stop backup happens at the very beginning, but it's a race condition. You know, what if there's some delay? So you don't really know when you can cancel the stop backup and still have a good and valid backup. So with this contribution, it's no longer an issue. We've also, like I said, my colleague Stephen Frost contributed being able to run start and stop backup as a non-super user. We're also working on the patch to be able to do the file level backup as a non-super user, et cetera, et cetera. So all of these are focused towards making, you know, the newer versions of Backrest run more smoothly. And not just for Backrest, of course. I mean, anything that we put into Postgres is so, for instance, the exclusions that are done now in Post, you know, that I added are all done in base backup as well. So base backup will not back up any of those, you know, extraneous files that don't need to be backed up anymore. So yes, so we definitely actively think about contributing to Postgres and how to make things smoother and faster. And one of the things we're thinking about is having base backup do page level checksums like Backrest does. There's really no reason why it couldn't. And so that seems like an obvious next contribution. Although the feature freeze for V10 just happened, so that would be a version 11 feature.
Okay, cool. And what license is this under?
It's MIT. Mostly not
very liberal.
Yeah, exactly. Not I like the very liberal license. MIT is the default for GitHub. I really do want, you know, everyone to be able to use it. That does include, in theory, obviously, integrate it into a closed source project. But I feel if it's going to be free, it should be completely free.
Yes, and I like the fact that these free licenses, although we've had this debate many times on the show, these free licenses, the more freer licenses like BSD and MIT license, things like that, actually give the original author and the first user exactly the same rights. Whereas yes, the GPL, the first author has a special privileged position, and everybody right. else is equally lower.
And, you know, one of the things that we talk about constantly in the Postgres community is how difficult it can be to integrate things with other, you know, less permissive licenses into Postgres at all. And so there are some things we'd like to bring in, and we're just not able to do it because of licensing conflicts. So I understand that with the MIT license, it could be possible that some big corporation will take Backrest, close source a version of it, and package it and sell it. It also means that other projects, we were talking earlier about a possible MySQL port. And if someone wanted to do that, they could just do that. And you know, there would be no restrictions on the license. And if they had existing code with another license, they wouldn't have to worry from the Backrest standpoint, at least how they integrated that.
And I presume this is already packaged up for all the various Linux distros and probably FreeBSD and all the other guys out there?
The only ones I'm sure of are Debian and so it's packaged for all the Debian-based systems. So that would be Ubuntu 12 and up, Debian, I think, 7 and up, and definitely for CentOS and RHEL as well. All those packages can be, for instance, the first distribution, I think, will be with Debian SID. That's the first Debian that will include pgbackrest in its, you know, in its default package set. Well, you know, at least the ones you can download, not the things that would be installed by default when you install. But you can also get all of this from app.postgres.org. So you can get the Debian and Ubuntu packages there, and you can also get the CentOS and RHEL packages.
And other than Perl, obviously, is there any other big dependencies that would throw you off here?
Really not. SSH, obviously. You do need to have a certain version of SSH, although the oldest operating system that we support and test on is CentOS 6, which has a pretty old version of SSH, and that actually works just fine, other than the fact that some of the error messages are a little different than newer versions. But other than that, so you can run on pretty old stuff. The Perl requirements are, you know, it's 5.10, So it's actually a pretty old version of Perl that is supported. And all of the additional modules that are needed, there aren't many, but they're actually available as packages on all the operating systems that we test on. So you don't have to say install CPAN or do anything like that.
Cool. Yeah, Guillermo just whispered in my ear here, OpenSSH or DropBearer? I presume that's a different kind of SSH.
Our testing has all been on OpenSSH, but I can't see any reason why any other. There really isn't a lot, really special options being used. So if it's reasonably command line compatible, then, it should be fine. The only thing we do is for certain communications channels, we turn off compression. Backrest actually does its own compression, so having SSH do it, again, doesn't make any sense. So the main comm channel is compressed, but all the file transfer channels are uncompressed from the perspective of SSH. But other than that, not a lot of special features used.
Okay, cool. And we're almost out of time. Is there anything we didn't ask that you want to make sure our audience is aware of?
Oh, boy. Boy, I should have an answer to that. <Didn't>
I? It's the most difficult question we ask our guests every time, though. So I just want because it's like now you have to go through and take everything you wanted to talk about and subtract out the things in real time that we actually did talk about and then come up with a different set and talk about it. Yeah, it's a difficult question. I understand.
I feel like the set of questions was pretty comprehensive. I mean, the main thing I would say is, I'm really excited to get more people out there using it. I think it's a really easy piece of software. It's a very performant piece of software, especially for people who have large systems. I'd like to see more people using it. I'd like to see, I'd like to say that, obviously people should be feel free to do contributions. This is even though Crunchy supports the development quite a bit, it is a completely free and open piece of software and a completely independent project. So people should be, feel free to contribute. I'm interested in all contributions. Obviously, I may not be able to accept all patches as they are, but ideas, patches, testing, all of those things, I'd really like to go to the community even more than it has been grown, and I'm really looking forward to that growing over time.
Cool. And so I have to ask my two required questions, especially since you're a hacker. I have to definitely ask these of you. What's your favorite scripting language, and what is your text editor you spend all day in?
Well, I guess my favorite scripting language is Perl.
Yay, one from my side. Yay. Okay.
It's certainly the one I spend most of my time in. I think Perl actually gets a really bad rap a lot of the time. It's kind of derided as a write-only language, and you can certainly write it as a write-only language. I have had a lot of people look at the PG Backrest project and write back to me in all caps how impressed they are by how readable it is and how, I use all the modern structures and strict in English and everything. And they say it just doesn't seem like Perl at all. So you can write Perl in a very readable and modular way. A lot of people just don't bother to. And as for my text editor, I've been using Atom for about a year and a half now. So it's free. I was using, I believe before that, TextMate, mostly just too cheap to pay for Sublime Text, which is a really great editor. but I feel like Atom has incorporated a lot of the good features of Sublime Text, and it's completely free, and it's also multi-platform. So developers that I work with who are working on Windows or Linux, we can all use the same editor, and I can give them scripts to deal with the quirks and things like that. So definitely
Atom. We're working on getting the Atom people on this show because it has definitely come up a lot in conferences I go to and demonstrations stuff. So, yeah, very good. Hey, David, it's been great having you on the show. I now know you'll have a lot more potential new downloads of this software and more people participating in your community because that's what my community does is they go out and try out new things. So thanks for being on the show.
All right, Randy. Thank you very much for having me.
Awesome. That was David Steele talking to us about PG Backrest. What do you think there, Guillermo?
Okay, so, It does seem to be something that I would use if I would still be in the, hosting business, which I used to be back in the early 2000s. It does seem like something that I will tell my current employer and clients about because it would help a lot. And I know a bunch of them do use Postgres. So, you know, it is something that I like. The only issue I have is the no lumbar support for a backrest. You need to do something about that.
That joke was just a little too deep for today, I think. Maybe that was the problem.
I know. You know me.
Well, English isn't your native language. You wouldn't have known that we would understand that at all. So anyway, sorry. Anyway. Yeah. And I like this. I like that we have, you know, people bolting on things onto Postgres. The Postgres community is huge. And Postgres is used by some of the world's largest databases. As I recall, the database that runs .org and .net is a live Postgres database with, you know, billions of records. So, you know, there's a huge installation there. So big stuff for that. And I'm always a big fan of Postgres. I mean, every time I see somebody, you know, select the wrong database like MySQL or anything that's related to that, I'm annoyed because Postgres has so many cool things to offer for that. So, any last words before I start talking about who's coming up?
No, not really. Go ahead.
Okay, so let's do it. Here's the rundown of what's coming up. Next week, we are moving to a very special time, a very special FOSS Weekly. We're actually moving to Wednesday instead of Tuesday. Same time of day, so 9:30 a.m. Pacific time, except it'll be Wednesday, not Tuesday. And we're going to bring on Screen Studio, which is a way to record and stream your full-res desktop and webcam. And it looks really cool. It's actually cross-platform. It runs on Mac OS and Linux and Windows all across the board. So that's pretty cool. Following that, back on Tuesdays again, Stacky, which is a bare metal provisioning tool from the creators of Rocks. Following that, we've got FreeNAS Corral. So Jason Hubbard, the benevolent dictator for life for FreeNAS, is coming on to talk about what's new in FreeNAS, which includes this better clustering and things like that. Immediately following that is OSCON. I will be at OSCON in Austin and looking for a guest all day Monday till I can have a guest for Tuesday morning. Otherwise, it's just going to be me and some people chatting online. I don't know what we're going to do if I can't find a guest in one day, but we'll make it happen. We've done this every year, so I'm pretty good at getting it down there. Kubernetes is going to be updated. We last talked to them in August 2015, but a lot of things have happened, particularly that's sort of an orchestration tool for Docker images. NPM, the Node.js package manager, is going to then join us the week following that. We're still filling more slots, as I am constantly. You go to twit.tv/floss, which is the homepage for this show. You can see the ones that I'm working on. And if you have somebody that should be on this show that is not on that list, please have the project leader or community coordinator or something like that. Email me, merlin@stonehenge.com. We have a live stream. We took a couple questions from it today. That's at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time, usually Tuesdays. Next week it'll be Wednesday. And that's accessible at live.twit.tv. You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Google Plus. You can go to @FlossWeekly on Twitter and follow that instead if you don't like Google Plus or you don't know how to figure it out. You follow me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus. It's where I source most of my bloggish sort of information when I'm not just chatting with my friends on Facebook. And that also tweets over to Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N. So I am going to be at a whole bunch of conferences. So this is conference season coming up. I'm going to be at the Red Hat Summit in Boston. And then immediately following that, the week will be OSCON in Austin. So there's a complex trip coming up in the next month or so. I'll be at YAPSE actually giving a talk on Perl best practices, except I have the talk called Perl second best practices because I disagree with Damien on some of the things there. I just got added as press to allthingsopen.org. That's a conference that happens in October in the Research Triangle. So I think that'll be the first time I've ever been there. So it'll be fun, but they're giving me carte blanche to come in and look for cool projects to put on this show. In fact, in all these conferences I'm talking about, I'm going to be looking for more guests. So hopefully there'll be a lot more on the list. And then finally, my one indulgence conference every year, DragonCon, coming up in Hotlanta in September. If you see me at any of these conferences, please come up, say hi. I love meeting y'all and love hearing the impact that this show has had, especially over the years, if you've been a longtime listener. So that's all I have to plug today. Guillermo, what do you want to plug?
Well, let's see. I'll be in Comic-Con this year, like almost every year. And I'll also be in BitCon later this year. Aside from that, I don't think I'm going to do any other conference, but I'll check. I guess people can follow me on Twitter. I am at @GAMARAL or at Gamaral. And you can look for me on YouTube. I also have a YouTube channel where I do, you know, technology, STEM things, and you can check those out if you're interested.
Cool. All right. Well, Guillermo, thank you for assisting me today and jumping in there and being the co-host for today's show.
No problem, Matt. Anytime.
Cool. And without further ado, we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.
And by the way, totally embarrassed about the lumbar support thing.
It was a deep joke. It was a sideways joke. Don't worry about it.
I should have made a funnier face when I asked that.
I'm always getting tons of questions about obscure monitoring software and just wacky stuff.
Right.
I speak at a lot of conferences, and I always get like a string of questions about X, Y, and Z. So I've gotten to the point where I just sort of deflect them by saying what we did rather than what we don't do. And
of course.
So you got me.
The issue right now is that JavaScript has so many frameworks and stuff like that out there that you can. I would not be surprised if there is a lumbar.
I looked it up just to see if I could cover myself on this one. I couldn't find anything relevant. So no, but yeah.
So Guillermo, you're gonna have to start one.
I know. I thought about it too. I thought maybe I could make this like a weekly thing. I could start a lumbar project later on or something.
Well, maybe lumbar. Okay, maybe lumbar would be the MySQL port of PG Backrest.
Oh, good idea.
Oh, boy.
My lumbar.
My lumbar.